When he got back to port, he would have to have a serious cleaning session. The space plane's life support filters really weren't designed to cope with so much crap. In its inactive state, the Lunar State Industrial Institute, SII, programmable amorphous silicone spacesuit, consisted of a thick collar 7 centimeters high, with an integral respirator tube and a black football-sized globe attached to the bottom. Joshua slipped the collar round his neck and bit the end of the tube, chewing his lips round until he was comfortable. When he was ready, he let go of the handhold, making sure he wasn't touching anything, and datavised an activation code into the suit's control processor. The SII spacesuit had been the astronautics industry standard since before Joshua was born. Developed by the Confederation's only pure communist nation, it was produced in the Lunar City factories, and under license by nearly every industrialized star system. It insulated human skin perfectly against a hostile vacuum, permitted sweat transpiration, and protected the wearer from reasonably high radiation levels. It also gave complete freedom of motion. The globe began to change shape, turning to oil and flowing over him, clinging to his skin like a tacky rubber glove. He closed his eyes as it slithered over his head. Optical sensors, studying the collar section, datavised an image directly into his neural mnemonics. The armor, which went on top of his new shiny black skin, was a dull, monobonded carbon exoskeleton with a built-in cold gas maneuvering pack, capable of withstanding virtually any kinetic impact the ruin ring would shoot at him. The SII suit wouldn't puncture, no matter what struck him, but it would transmit any physical knock. He ran both suit and armor checklists again while he clipped tools to his belt, both fully functional. When he emerged into the ruin ring, the first thing he did was datavise a code lock order to the outer hatch. The airlock chamber was unprotected against particle bombardment, and there were some relatively delicate systems inside. It was 1,000-to-1 chance, but 5 or 6 scavengers disappeared in the ring each year. He knew some scavengers, and even starship crews, who had grown blasé about procedures, always moaning at Confederation Astronautics Board operational safety requirements. More losers, probably with a deep death wish. He didn't have to worry about the rest of the space plane. With its wings retracted, it was a streamlined 15-meter needle designed to take up as little room in a starship's hangar as possible. Its carbotanium fuselage was tough, but for working the ruin ring, he had coated it with a thick layer of cream-colored foam. There were several dozen long score lines etched into it, as well as some small blackened craters. Joshua orientated himself to face the shell section and fired the maneuvering pack's gas jets. The space plane began to shrink behind him. Out here in deep space, the sleek shape seemed completely incongruous, but it had been the only craft he could use. Several additional reaction mass tanks and 5 high-capacity electron matrix cells were strapped around the tail, also covered in foam, looking like some kind of bizarre cancerous growths. The detritus of the ruin ring drifted unhurriedly around him, a slow-tempo snowstorm, averaging 2 or 3 particles per cubic meter. Most of it was soil and polyp, brittle, petrified chips. They brushed against the armor, some bouncing off, some fragmenting. There were other objects, too, twisted scraps of metal, ice crystals, smooth rounded pebbles, lengths of cabling gradually flexing. None of them had any color. The F3 star was 1.7 billion kilometers away, too distant to produce anything other than a pallid monochrome, even with the sensor's amplification. Merchusko was just visible, a bleached, weary green bulk, misted over like a dawn sun behind a band of cloud. Whenever Joshua went EVA, it was always the absolute quiet which got to him. In the space plane, there was never any silence. The hums and whines of the life support, sudden snaps from the thruster nozzle linings as they expanded and contracted, gurgles from the makeshift water lines. They were constant reassuring companions, but out here there was nothing. The suit skin clogged his ears, muffling even the sound of his own breathing. If he concentrated, he could just make out his heartbeat, waves breaking on a very distant shore. He had to battle against the sense of smothering, the universe contracting.